You are listening to a sermon by Dr. John Friesen, recorded on Sunday, June 3, 2018, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
I wish to say, first of all, how pleased I am to see many of you here today. I had a bit of a nightmare, this being the first week of June. Perhaps there wouldn't be many people here. And so, thank you for coming. It's so wonderful to see you here today. The topic, Who Am I?, has been of considerable interest to me during my professional life. It covers a wide range of human experience, including such concepts as identity formation, self-definition, selfhood, the inner world, identity crisis, narrative, story, transformation, conversion, and many, many others. It's a central theme of many people because who we are is central to our contributions and central to how we live our lives. As a professor, psychologist, and researcher, I've dealt with hundreds of people who have suffered from what we call an identity crisis. Their problems may include things like anorexia, bulimia, alcohol and drug addiction, depression, anxiety, marital and family conflict, and many others. They also include the ordinary problems of everyday living when we ask the question, who am I, and how do I deal with these various life issues, particularly transitions. I'm going to talk a little bit about transitions as a place where we often get stuck around who we are. My own career started as a school teacher in the Vancouver school system, and that's where I thought I would continue. However, my principal, Ev Irwin, at the Sir Winston Churchill High School, visited my classroom, as he did others on a yearly basis. And did an inspection, and I was quite filled with anxiety when he was coming to see how well I taught or how well I related to students. He called me into his office and gave me a report, and in this report he was very kind. Principals can be kind on occasions. Very kind. And he said to me, you have many gifts working with students. And he recommended that I continue my education towards a doctorate in psychology and take on leadership roles in society. He was a mentor to me, and we need positive mentors in various times of our life. I followed his advice, which came with considerable encouragement and support. I have pursued a very interesting career. So the theme of my sermon, Who Am I? arises directly from my personal involvement in people's lives. When I was appointed to the faculty of UBC in 1966, I was assigned a course called Adolescent Psychology. And as many of you may know, the major task of adolescence is to develop a sense of personal identity, or a sense of who they are. And so my first lecture that I gave to the class was, "Who am I? Where am I going, and why?" I made it clear that identity formation was the major responsibility of adolescence and continues to be throughout life. In fact, I maintained if this function was not achieved during adolescence, people may well struggle for a sense of identity for years in their lives. They would probably face an identity crisis by being locked into particular patterns and unable to move beyond them. We see that again and again, particularly downtown when we talk to homeless people. They're stuck in a particular pattern of identity. To reinforce this purpose, the purpose of this course, I assigned a 1,000-word essay on the topic, "Who Am I?" This was to be a personal paper in which students asked themselves the question that we are addressing today. Using a variety of sources, including psychological instruments, interviewing friends and relatives, and reflecting seriously on their inner life, their task was to write a response to the question I am raising today. I still have copies of some of those essays, which I keep in a file, and I am cleaning out files. So I found those essays a few days ago. One student wrote that she was a Christian and that her identity was formed by her faith and her relationship to Jesus Christ. Now that happens at a secular university, not only in Bible school, that people are willing to express who they are around their faith. Another student started the essay by describing her parents' divorce and how she was struggling to develop a self-definition. Another student claimed that he was on a journey of self-discovery. Each student described their own understanding of themselves based on a variety of sources. This morning, I wish to compare and contrast three central figures in the Bible addressing the issue of self-identity. These include Moses, David, and Jesus. Each had a specific identity, and which was developed over time and from which they lived. Moses, at the age of 80, asked the question, "Who am I?" And out of that question arose this feeling of incompetence, inadequacy, fear of failure, and, heaven help us, old age. David answered this question out of a feeling of strength, of youth, and of vision. And Jesus answered this question out of a sense of mission. to a troubled world. Let us begin with the identity of Moses at the age of 80. In Exodus 3, verse 11, we find these very reluctant and unconvincing words of Moses. He proclaimed, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" Another translation reads, "I am nobody," Moses said. "How can I go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" In another reference, Moses said to God, "Please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in the time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." And again in Judges 6:15, Moses says, "O Lord, how shall I deliver Israel? Behold, my family is the least in Manasseh, and I am the youngest in my father's house." That's an interesting observation. I am the least in that particular tribe in which Moses found himself. Moses grew up intelligent, self-confident, and self-reliant. In Pharaoh's court, he had the best education possible. He had nurturance, nutrition, and immense personal support. He obviously had very high level of self-esteem, self-respect, and confidence. He loved his life and the many opportunities and challenges available to him in Pharaoh's court. However, at age 40, you will recall, the good life Moses had enjoyed ended. He was now banished to the desert. While in the desert, he had an identity crisis, herding flocks of sheep, protecting them, and living a very harsh and demanding life. He felt differently about himself. And by age 80, even though God was asking him to assume a major responsibility, David felt a sense of little worth, sense of inadequacy, and feeling of unacceptance. After herding sheep, Moses felt he no longer had the necessary elegance to speak to Pharaoh in his court. He lacked courage and confidence. He had grown old. And as we think about this situation of Moses, perhaps some of us understand, particularly those of us over 80, we understand the kind of process Moses was experiencing in his aging process. A little more than a year ago, Mama Ferna was diagnosed with cancer, and those of you who know her know she was a person of immense strength and competence and high self-esteem. And now she was identified with bone cancer. And as chemotherapy treatment began and as it continued, she felt ill and without energy. And she felt increasingly, who am I? And she would ask that question again and again, who am I? And her identity had changed. In fact, she didn't know who she was. And here I was as a caretaker, trying to help her deal with the bone marrow cancer. For us, it was an immense transition. And so, in transition, particularly when there's suffering, we ask again and again, who are we in this suffering? And as I think about the response of this church to our suffering, we are overwhelmed by your love and your care and your compassion and the many letters we received and the food we received, and this helped us to more fully address or fully deal with the suffering. So I want to say thank you for that support. Our church and student ministry was formed over 30 years ago. We purchased this convent and formed this church with great enthusiasm and energy. After all, that was 30 years ago. We were ready to take on the challenges of the world. We were confident and defined ourselves with a sense of strength. And this world was our oyster. This was our calling. God richly blessed our mission. For this we are thankful beyond measure. Positive student testimonials, which describe student experiences at Menno, are readily available on our website. These testimonials are rich with gratitude and thankfulness. In the same sense of gratitude, Rosie Pereira and her associates produced an outstanding documentary several years ago, which described the rich community of this church. Many people have seen this film and have expressed very positive comments about our vibrant community. We are now in transition. Some of us are over 80 years of age and withdrawing, and I want to say this very strongly, we are delighted with the new leadership, particularly of Veronica and her board. These are the younger generation who come with new vision and come with new leadership skills and come with energy and strength and self-confidence. And that is wonderful. Moses and those of us who are over 80, we gladly pass the baton over to you, and Andre and others have have taken on this new leadership. And Kevin, thank you. Let us now turn to the life of David and assess his personal sense of identity. Who was David? What were his identity issues? I wish to focus particularly on David's response to Goliath. In this dramatic encounter with Goliath, we recognize David's definition of self, his selfhood. Even as a young person, David expressed unbelievable courage, self-esteem, and confidence. This story tells us how God used a brave young man full of faith and personal confidence to face a giant of a man called Goliath. With a sling in hand, David chose 5 strong, smooth stones from a brook and shouted as he ran into the valley of certain death. God guided David's actions, and the stone fell between the eyes of the giant, and the giant was instantly killed. David is not the only person to face a giant. We all face our giants. Erna faces the giant of cancer, as I do, as a caretaker. Giants come to us in various forms. They often come as depression, anxiety, or fear, or they come to us in negative thoughts of delusional expectations and perceptions, or for some people, their giants come to them in the form of lack of self-esteem and self-respect and worthiness, failure. I recall so clearly in the 1980s, some people faced economic ruin and financial failure. They would suffer intense despair and self-blaming. They were afraid to meet with their bank manager and act constructively to address their economic problems. I spent considerable time hearing the stories of these near bankrupt people. I have spent a lifetime helping people face their giants. Some churches, in fact, also face giants in their conflict and in their misunderstanding. Paul says in Ephesians 6:12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I have identified a list of giants that people face that I'd like to present to you. The giant of resentment. This is a substantial giant that we find in contemporary society, where there's jealousy and resentment that other people are able to do more than you, or they have more money. And they feel resentment, a giant of fear, a giant of loneliness, a giant of guilt and shame, the giant of worry, the giant of discouragement, the giant of jealousy, the giant of depression, of hopelessness, of bitterness, of pride, and selfishness. I wish now to move from some reflections on Moses and David to identify some of the issues Jesus faced. Through the eyes of his disciples and others, Jesus identified his personal identity issues while asking the question, "Who do people say that I am? And who do you say that I am?" The Gospels in Matthew 16 tell us that there was a conversation that took place between Jesus and his disciples at the coast of Caesarea Philippi. This experience took place right after the feeding of the 5,000 and before a few of the disciples witnessed Jesus' transfiguration on the mountain. Out of these conversations, significant understandings about the identity of Jesus developed. These insights and understandings from the fabric of the Christian faith, they form the structure and content of Christian theology throughout the centuries. In those conversations, Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Now, Peter made an amazingly significant response, which has been the doctrine of the Christian church since the beginning of time and even today. Peter's response was, "You are the Christ, the Anointed One, the Messiah, the Son of the Living God." This is the foundation of the Christian faith. And I stand in amazement at Peter's insight and impact on Christian theology. Over the centuries, Peter's insight has developed into a creed, which is repeated every Sunday by many churches. Countless sermons have been preached on Peter's definition of Jesus. "You are Christ, the Anointed One, the Messiah, the Son of the Living God." As I thought about this, it is interesting to note that Jesus' identity was identified during a conversation. He didn't give a lecture on his identity. Rather, it grew out of a conversation. It is curious to note that from the very beginning of this church, dialogue, discourse, and interaction lies at the heart of this community. Rather than lecture, rather than preaching. When I was an undergraduate student at UBC, I was struggling with the question, "Who is Jesus in my life?" I well recall a lecture given by Dr. John Ross on this question at the university meeting. John Ross was a philosophy professor at UBC and also dean of students at the Presbyterian residence on campus. He made it clear that Jesus was a historical person. but he was also divine. And through a relationship with him, we establish a relationship with the spiritual, with the mystical, and with the holy other. This is still the mystery of the Christian faith. Our faith develops through a relationship with the divine. In the last few weeks, a very significant book has been published. It is called Sources of the Christian Self. And it has been released by two of my friends, James Houston, who was formerly the president of Regent College, and Jens Zimmerman, a professor at Trinity Western. This book contains 42 chapters describing the identities or the inner views or the self-concepts of 42 major Christian leaders from Jesus' time to the present. And it's amazing as I read this that each of these leaders had a very different view of themselves. Calvin, for example, and I don't like Calvin very much, and I only found out when I read it, the chapter. Calvin was a very anxious and very self-absorbed person. And when he spoke, he was addressing his inner issues, and he spoke with immense passion. I assume that's the nature of the game. People externalize their inner issues even in their sermons. Out of the depth of their heart comes their message. Kierkegaard, one of my great leaders of the Christian church, is in this book and it describes his inner self, his life. I want to quote a bit from this book. Speaking about Bonhoeffer and the last section on this book written by Zimmerman. Not merely the history of philosophy, but also of psychology and sociology, so show us how central the topic of identity, the question, who am I, is for human existence. This question cannot be reduced to biological, physical, or even mental aspects of being. Selfhood transcends pathways of DNA coding, character traits, or any other substance-oriented notions of sameness. Even if all these are part of our identity, true selfhood consists in our relationship to others. I want to say that again because that is so central to my own philosophy. True selfhood consists in our relationship to others. We are true selves when we freely enact our responsibility to others and when we show compassion and care to others. Christian theology shows us that the unified self from which true freedom flows is found only when the significant other is the living God, who gave his own self for the life of others and the redemption of the world.